Dan Levitard, if we're really being honest about it, it's just a giant piece of shit.
To the Big Suey.
Bald Eagles.
A podcast exclusive that none of our bosses asked for.
More sports.
More work. Less pay.
I haven't stopped talking in a month. I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Just when you thought the show couldn't be more diluted. Bam.
Last time I listened to this show.
I haven't listened for years.
Now here's the marching band to nowhere.
Am I missing something? What am I missing?
The end of the story.
Fat face.
Chris Fallick.
It's Felica. You made him a penis.
And the habitual liar.
I didn't ask for any of it.
You asked for all of it.
The Big Suey.
I'm Chris Cody, BSPN.
Welcome, everybody, to the third edition of Basketball's Most Brilliant Minds. As always, I am joined by Amin El Hassan, Zach Harper, Izzy Gutierrez, and Hollywood Jorge Sedano. Guys, we were all anticipating a tight series. I all saw your predictions. Man, we can all laugh at Jorge for really botching that game one prediction. Woo! Was Jorge off? Everyone is clamoring for reseeds, George Sedano. Everyone is upset that this is the finals. This is a blowout. This is a sweep. Skip Bayless is already congratulating LeBron on his cakewalk of a finals. But you actually did some math here and actually looked up what this would look like, because I took exception to the ESPN content machine making this a thing. Reseed the playoffs. How could we possibly have the Miami Heat? I kind of remember the Miami Heat eliminating the best team in basketball in five games. Jorge, your take on this matter.
So if you reseed the entire playoffs, the Lakers are the third seed and the Heat are the 11th seed. So the first round matchup would have been Lakers-Mavericks, Heat-Boston, which clearly both would have advanced. In a second round reseed, again, we're reseeding where the top opponent or the top seed gets the worst seed. That would mean Miami would face Milwaukee, who was the one seed. The Lakers would face the Rockets. Denver would face the Clippers. Toronto would face Utah. We would then have Lakers Nuggets more than likely, right? Because Denver beat the Clippers and Miami and Toronto, which means it's still very likely that you end up getting Miami and the Lakers.
It feels as though a nation's just still upset they didn't get Lakers Clippers, which is what we were all hoping for. And I guess Boston LA Lakers is obviously a storied rivalry in the finals, but it's not like you would fancy Boston's chances more. However, when you add injuries like we saw in game one, you'd certainly take the healthier team. And the news broke yesterday. Bam Adebayo, doubtful. Goran Dragic, doubtful. Amin, you are the mayor of Heat Island, but there were certain matchup problems that really stuck out. You could hang your hat on, okay, Eric Spoelstra can make some adjustments, but now that you add injuries to the equation, it's getting really difficult to like Miami's chances in making this a competitive series.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing, Mike, is there were a bunch of things that happened that are tactically and strategically they could do better or they could do differently. I was very amused by the number of people like, oh, I thought you said the Heat. Well, if I picked the Heat in six, I didn't say Heat in four. So I clearly was allowing for losses, and in NBA playoff series, often you'll get a big loss, but this isn't soccer. It's not an aggregate score. Winning by a million doesn't put you up big. It just puts you up 1-0 in the series. Having said that, the injuries do obviously change the tenor of the chances of making this a series that can win. I think it can still be competitive. I thought, for instance, they didn't unveil the zone at all. They had maybe three or four possessions of zone.
Right.
And that was one of the things I was talking with Zach on the radio on SiriusXM NBA, and I said, is that a case of they start the game, they're playing pretty well, and then as things get out of hand, Spo says, well, let me save this for when it has a chance to win the game. You don't want to show your cards. I don't know. Or is that a decision that they don't want to go into a zone against the Lakers? I don't know what direction they're going with that. The other thing is you always got to keep in mind, you know, Kendrick Perkins talked about this a lot in our pregame show before game one. Your first NBA finals is going to be a zillion emotions running through your head. And it's hard to focus on what you're supposed to focus on. You can be overwhelmed by that moment just because of the butterflies and all that. And I think there's no question looking at Tyler Hero in particular and Bam to a certain extent before he got hurt. And say, yeah, those guys looked like they were doing too much. They looked out of sorts and out of whack. But that's something that I think moving the game too, some of those butterflies will rest. But again, you throw in those injuries, man.
Let's stay there, though, because I don't want to spend the whole time saying, hey, they're going to lose because of the injuries. But I was thinking the same thing in terms of what they could have done, what Miami could have done better slash differently. And like offensively, look, against a team that's bigger than you, even more so than the other teams, you just have to be really decisive and you have to just move fast because otherwise those guys are going to recover. So the Heat weren't getting very good shots and they weren't very decisive in what they were doing. And that sort of speaks to what Amin was saying. They were probably just kind of going through the motions because it's like, holy shit, it's the NBA Finals. But I think they could have improved that by a ton. And Tyler Hero specifically has been really bad at that since the 37-point game. He's just kind of feels like maybe he got a little overconfident, doesn't realize what he has to do to get a clean shot off or even get a clean pass off because he makes some lazy passes a lot of the time.
Well, I think Amin and Zach have discussed this on their show. Zach, your words were actually playing through my head when I was watching Tyler in game one. He's actually quite decisive. It's just sometimes it's a bad decision. What do you make of
it? Yeah.
He
knows what he wants to do. It's just not always.
No, that's a great point. Like, that's part of it too, is like he makes, and I said this before, he sort of predetermines what he wants to do and he's going to do it regardless. And then there's other times where he's just kind of floating around. And when I mean indecisive, I just kind of mean, I guess it's not really indecisive. It's just like not very declarative. Like the times where he just kind of just gives the ball off and he realizes that, oh, you know, that guy with long arms can take it in no time.
I thought that a couple of things that they did too that they could have done differently was just the way they defended. I mean, they switched unnecessarily. It felt like just
that's where it felt like they weren't doing anything, like not letting their cards out. It was just let's just play them like we play everybody else. There's nobody special on that team.
Yeah, right. So I just felt like that was super weird. And even their hedging was like so nonchalant. Like it's not like they were forcing LeBron to do anything different. Like it was really strange the way they did that. And I get in theory, right? Like that they wanted to keep Bam off of AD to get not force him into foul trouble like Jokic did, except he ended up into foul trouble on two questionable calls anyway. Yeah, like I just think that the whole strategy, while sound in theory, in execution was a disaster.
I floated this theory by Amin on the show on Thursday, and I want to see what you guys think of this. LeBron has won an NBA Finals Game 1 once. That was in 2011. They lost that series. Spo knows LeBron as well as anybody, right? So what if they tank game one, they don't show any cards, they fake injuries, and maybe we have two Willis Reed moments going into game two where it's, oh, these guys aren't out, they're doubtful. And then all of a sudden, you see that little tunnel, the light comes through, and now these shadowy figures come through and block off that hallway light at whatever that gym is called in the Walt Disney World Resort, and they walk through, and they're kind of limping, and then they just stand upright. And they just walk with confidence, right? They walk with confidence and they go out there and they sweep. The old gentleman sweep after losing the game one.
There's a smoke machine too, right?
There's a smoke machine. Yeah. There's, you know, lights. The 0-4 tuna plane as soon as they walk through the
I don't even think the smoke machine will affect Anthony Davis. Yeah.
Well, they don't need a smoke machine because J.R. Smith and Deion Waiters are there. But, you know, in theory, a smoke machine would be the reason the smoke is there.
But Bam can also walk fine. That's not the issue with
it. No, because I've got a shoulder thing, and so like I'm a little slumped over, but he goes upright, you know?
George, you have some news on the severity of Bam Adebayo's, at least as of yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, it feels – I've been told that he's just even having – he's struggling even just kind of lifting his arm, right, like above his head right now. Now, granted, that could just be the initial soreness of it all and dealing with the injury, so I'm not saying it's 100% that he's out, but that's why he's doubtful. The Heat never list anyone as doubtful. Like, I honestly, Izzy, you've covered that team for a long time. Like, I don't ever recall them even using the words doubtful. It's either like probable, questionable, or out, right? Like, never.
Yeah, it feels like they're doubtful. Just going with the doubtful to keep the our guys will do anything to play in these games idea. Right.
Yeah.
But that seems highly unlikely.
Yeah.
But it's a strain, though. And so there are all types of strains. As long as there's not structural damage, a lot of times it's just pain and discomfort. And while I know, you know, Rachel Nichols had the report the other night that Bam is needle averse, and as someone who's needle averse, I understand fully. I don't have any tattoos or piercings or anything because I'm afraid of needles. Having said that, it's the NBA Finals. Maybe have mommy hold your hand and get shot up and get back out there, young man.
Wait a second. You're needle averse?
Yeah, I'm terrified of needles.
Why don't you just not look at it?
Because I still feel it.
But it's not a knife.
It feels
it's
like
just
a knife.
It's just a prick. Like,
yeah, well, nobody likes pricks.
Then how am I employed?
That explains a lot.
I think the Bam thing, maybe it's doubtful and he could end up playing. Like, there's a lot of time for treatment, right? And he could end up playing tonight. Like, it might be. With Goran, I think it's insane to think that he's going to play. Like, that is ridiculous. But with Bam, like, it might be a thing of, look, he can get a bunch of treatment. Well, you know, a lot of massage therapy, a lot of, you know, fluid, whatever it takes to get that worked out. And then if he can put his jersey on his own, like, it'll be good enough to go out there and you can kind of work on it when he comes out of the game and everything. Like, I do wonder if that is part of that, you know, that culture allure of, like, you know, kind of what you're saying of yeah, our guys will do anything. But then with Bam, it actually might end up coming to fruition as, like, this inspirational moment.
Izzy, I want to go to you on this because the injury certainly changed his dynamic. I'd actually like the Miami Heat wearing that loss and given what the national reaction is to that game one loss from just a purely betting standpoint, the way that typically yo-yos, I would love their chances entering this game. But now that the injuries are a very real thing and Bam Adebayo is in doubt and it feels like Goran Dragic is probably in doubt for the entire series, there's very little here in the way of hope, right?
You know, it's funny is because I was saying the same thing and then I saw that one little gif of Jimmy Butler saying, "All right," and I think he's going to give everything he's got to win this next game. And whether that, like, if Bam Adebayo can play at, you know, 75% or whatever, I think, you know, the combination of trying to get LeBron and AD into foul trouble by just driving on them and maybe getting a lucky call against AD and, you know, taking and making a good number of threes, I think that is still in there. It's still in their playbook. It's still something they can pull off. It's still, you know, they can have a great half, an explosive quarter still offensively. And, you know, you just have to hope that guys like KCP and Caruso and whatever don't have any sort of real impact. And you leave Rondo out there and he'll go 1-for-4 from three. I don't think it's that bleak. If Bam can play, I still think there's something left in Miami. Like we said earlier, it wasn't exactly everything they threw out there. It wasn't all the cards they threw out there. It wasn't all their emotion. It wasn't, you know, it was a very blah game, which is pretty surprising.
But I mean, those injuries do affect their ability to make a lot of threes, right? We know that Miami can get desperate and shoot well from distance and steal a game that way. But Goran Dragic is a big part of that threat from the outside. Bam Adebayo finding open shooters inside out is also a big part of that. You take away those two components and you're just sort of Hail Marying it.
I'm not going to sugarcoat this. If Bam can't play, the series is over. He has to play. Bam and Jimmy have to play. They can survive. I think they can survive the loss of Goran
right. In
this way. In that, obviously, Tyler Hero, I can't see him playing as poorly as he did in game one again. But the other part of it is, this is a guy who played well, albeit garbage time, but Kendrick Nunn, right? This is a guy who's got some opportunity to now step up, step back into the role that he had for the entire regular season and go out there and put some points on the board and basically reclaim the role that he had all year long. And you know, I was talking with Zach earlier. We were going through kind of who are some other guys in the past who've been young guys who stepped up big time on this stage, on the NBA Finals. Because you might say, I mean, how you expect this guy to jump in? But, you know, you go back to 94, Sam Cassell as a rookie had a great NBA Finals. If you look at his regular season numbers, he played 66 games, started only 6 of them, played less than 18 minutes a game, shot okay from the field, obviously not well from three, but that's back then, so I'm not going to hold that too much against him. Kendrick Nunn had a much stronger lead up to the NBA Finals than Sam Cassell did. Same thing, you go a few years later, Speedy Claxton for San Antonio. You know, he's a guy who played all right during the regular season, but stepped up in the NBA Finals and played a big role. Now, Speedy had, I believe he was a second-year player at the time, but the point remains that these are guys that you might not have said before the NBA Finals, he's going to play a big role in them winning, and they ended up going out and doing that at a very young age. Kendrick Nunn has an opportunity here, but if Bam's not out there, then I don't think it works.
To Amin's point, in the playoffs this year, before game one, they had played 449 minutes together, Butler and Adebayo, and they outscored opponents by 10.3 points per 100 possessions when both were on the floor. But they were outscored by 3 points per 100 possession in 103 minutes when Bam was off the floor. When they're both off the floor, it was a disaster. It was like minus 14 points. But yeah, to Amin's point, if Bam really is, I know they joke about saying heart and soul. They don't joke, right? Like, we take it as a joke that he's the heart and soul. He really is. Defensively, he covers up a lot of their mistakes, even though he's not this traditional shot blocking threat, right? But just the way he covers ground. And then on offense, he's a big part of their dribble handoff game, right? He's a big part of their cutting game, right? And even whether it's him cutting or diving to the basket or passing. So, and they've scored almost 10% of their points this year off of dives and cuts and things like that.
He's a point guard,
right?
He is their offense. Not in the sense of he scores 30 points a game. He's their offense in that everything is predicated on Bam and Bam's ability to make reads.
Right.
Let's say Bam does play. Why wouldn't Dwight Howard just be a straight goon with him? Right. Like there is no reason for Dwight to not play recklessly. Because if he gets pulled from the game, gets thrown out, whatever, they're better off anyway. They killed once they went to the small line and once they went to AD at the five. Like, I think there is a great risk in, all right, let's say Bam decides he can go in game two. And then, like, Dwight was reckless against Jokic. What is to stop him from doing it against Bam? Like, I do think there is legitimate risk in that. And maybe that's being too careful, but I do think there's legitimate risk.
Udonis Haslam.
Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do it. Yes. Yes. Our Speedy Claxton is Udonis Haslam this whole time.
Speedy Claxton was young. That's different.
No. This is the unexpected star. Bizarro, yeah. Sam Cassell. Udonis Haslam is the key, George.
Yeah. AD was incredible to Zach's point, though. When they ran Dwight off the floor in that first quarter, midway through the first quarter, Vogel took that timeout. He yanked Dwight real quick. And all of a sudden when AD was at center, they were plus 25. Like, it was, that was the whole run, was AD just them downsizing and AD going to center.
Kelly Olynyk would be the bizarro Sam Cassell.
Kelly Olynyk would be good
in every way.
I actually feel like, call me crazy, I think that Spo should play Myers and Kelly to at least stretch the floor, because they're going to play Dwight again. Yeah. And they're probably going to play JaVale. And look, when Myers was in the starting lineup with Kendrick, I understand it's the regular season, it was a long time ago now, right? That team, that starting five, had one of the best net ratings of a starting five unit in the league. Like, give it a shot. You have no, you're going to lose this series, right? So you might as well try something.
That's a good point. We did bandy about Myers Leonard because Miami doesn't have this traditional second big, because LA's got all this size, and this would typically be a Myers-Leonard series, right? Because I think he can rebound. He's got this big frame. He's muscular. He can bang down low. However, I was looking at Myers-Leonard's game and understanding the bubble's a different animal. In his two games against the Lakers, he had one total rebound, and he had a decent amount of playing time. Izzy, I want to ask you about the key moment in game one. Early on, it felt like Miami was getting whatever they wanted with Dwight Howard out there. Timeout, LeBron goes to the bench, and guys like KCP and Rondo start elevating the Lakers, and really that's where the game was won. Rondo's turned into a dependable shooter out there. What did we see in that early going with Miami? Was this just a slow start by the Los Angeles Lakers and nothing to read into? And how important are the other guys for LA shooting in ways that we haven't seen all bubble?
I think that's the part where I'm probably going to spend more time, because the other part, well, like I said before, I just think the Heat, you know, probably got a little comfortable even early because they got some looks and had a lead and then just felt like they could just go, you know, half speed. But the part about, you know, the Lakers, other guys, and, you know, it made me think a lot about everybody saying, and myself included, before the series, hey, numbers 3 through 7 in terms of, you know, what they their value are better or than, you know, the Lakers' next guy, the Lakers' third guy. And that's only true, again, if the Heat's doing everything it's supposed to do. Duncan Robinson's value is not necessarily having to make eight threes. It's also just having to make sure that, you know, there's four sets of four eyes on him and getting open shots elsewhere. And that stuff wasn't there. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, well, Rajon Rondo can create. He's not going to be Goron. He's not gonna, but he can have his moments where he can do something like that, break down defenses, etc. And, you know, Kyle Kuzma is like 6'10", so he's going to bother a guy like Tyler Hero and stuff. So, you know, they're not trash players, the Lakers other guys. And when, you know, sort of the Heat players don't really live up to what they're supposed to do in their system, then the Lakers guys just look better and they can perform better and they have a little bit more confidence.
Having said that, first half Lakers 11 of 17 from three, second half 4 of 21.
Yeah.
There's a part of that, what we saw last night, which is the Lakers role players making shots, I don't have a whole lot of confidence. Like Markieff Morris continuing to shoot that well. KCP, Danny Green. It was very front loaded that first half of the 3-point shooting. And the second half was like kind of a come down to earth. But the difference is by then, obviously the game had gotten out of hand and you had those injuries and all that. But it is interesting to me, at least, that, you know, the Lakers won this game with an amazing stretch starting kind of from the second quarter to early in the third. And then everything else outside of that, it was a pretty even game. Again, it sucks that we have to keep couching it with injury talk. But if those guys hadn't gotten injured, I think the outcome would have been the same. I think the Heat still get blown out in game one based on the way they play. But I think you go back and you sit and you go through the tape and you identify things you talk about in film. And then we go back and we play a lot better in game two. The thing that's going to make it difficult is, to me, it all comes down to Bam. If Bam can go, I think if you're Miami, you're fine. You got the next man up thing. If Bam can't go, you've just cratered everything that you do on both ends on the floor.
Yeah, I think the issue with the 3-point disparity from the first half and the second half with the Lakers is that, yes, they shot 4-21 in the second half, but the Heat shot 4-19, right? And so the Heat also shoot poorly, and it's not, and you would expect them to be better because they were the best at this season, right? Mm-hmm. But also, this Lakers team is very good defensively, and they also had a game where they held the Rockets to 30 attempts from deep, which is a half for them. And that's significant to me of, like, they clearly can defend the perimeter. Danny Green did a great job. KCP did a great job. And so if you can't generate those kind of looks normally against this Lakers team, then how do you do them? And even if healthy, right, even if Bam can go, you still have to figure out a way to crack that perimeter defense.
George, you know the Laker team better than anybody in the Zoom right now. The Lakers other guys, not really a storyline entering this because they're the two guys and then you pick Miami, but they come and rise to the occasion. Sustainable for three more games? Rondo has been really good since his return to the bubble.
Yeah, I think it is somewhat sustainable because all they really need is like one other guy to have like a pretty good game. You know what I mean? And then minimal contributions across the board. And KCP was that guy, right? Like he was hitting a ton of shots. And then beyond that, you know, they got a few shots here from like Markieff Morris. Rondo played well, right? But I think that's just it. They just need one or two more guys beyond LeBron and AD to step up. And they can choke you. And we've seen that already in these other series that they've been playing.
Well, now that the news is out that Bam and Goran are doubtful, maybe Miami gets extended a little bit of credit. But one of the things that kind of bothered me, and look, I did this with the Nuggets. I was rooting against the Nuggets. Like, why are you winning against the Clippers and ruining everything? And I think people are just upset that they're getting this matchup now, given the injuries. But if the Los Angeles Lakers had injuries to their leading scorer in the first round, leading scorer in the second round, leading scorer in the third round, that would be a huge takeaway from game one if the results were reversed. And that's not what we're hearing right now. We're hearing anger that the Miami Heat are just merely there. Those are big injuries to Miami within the course of game one. Is it just that because Los Angeles went on this run with some of those guys in there already?
Mike, it was 75-30, like, and the injuries were happened like towards the tail end of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I think that's
well,
it was
a single digit deficit with Goran in there.
Correct. But they had already come back from down 13 at that point.
So I guess that's what it is.
But the reality is that the majority of their comeback And they're just really just pulling away happened with a relatively healthy Miami team. You know what I'm saying? Like Goran was still going to miss time at some point. He had played 15 minutes in the first half. It's not like he didn't play that many less minutes than he would have played in a normal first half. And they were down, you know, what, almost 20 points at halftime. So yeah, like that's just it, man. Like, yes, your point is valid moving forward that, you know, to Zach and Amin Izzy's points too, like, without Bam being healthy, they've got no shot, like no shot to win a game. You know what I mean? But yeah, like yesterday, I'm not blaming the injuries. Injury riddled is the state of the team. It's not the reason that they lost.
Yeah, no, the game one loss is a game one loss. Like I said, if nobody got hurt, I think we still see a blowout win for the Lakers. Just based on the way Miami was playing, that tentativeness, the out of control play, the defense that was very kind of, you know, the soft switches, all those things were playing right into what the Lakers wanted. And the Lakers shot, by the way, we haven't talked about that, that 11 of 17 three-point shooting. A lot of it was target practice. It wasn't, hey, we're active, we're getting our close out. Those guys had feet set and yep. Their eyes wide and no issues at all getting those shots off.
I mean, was that the design? It seemed as though they could have gotten there. The Miami Heat players could have gotten there. And for whatever reason, they didn't just fully close out. Like the design was, okay, Caruso, okay, KCP, okay, Rondo, you take that shot. And yeah. It was a little frustrating because it just goes counterculture.
Yeah, it felt a very Milwaukee-esque, right? That the idea that we are going to make sure LeBron doesn't beat us inside, which technically he didn't, right? He had 5 points, I think, in the first half. Problem is he had 50,000 assists because he's passing to these guys who are wide open at the three-point line. There's nothing about the injuries has anything to do with game one. But I got to say, Mike, this is why I've gone on Twitter less and less and less. Because the conversation is just so corny. The idea that anyone watched that game and surmise, I wish someone else was playing in the finals after they beat all the sweethearts. Because everybody was kind of rubbing certain body appendages over Celtics Lakers and they smacked them around. And everybody was, yeah, and everybody was getting excited for the real MVP battle. They smacked them boys too. So you can't get here and now because they lost game one. And, oh, I wish there was someone else. It's just so corny. But that's where we are from a social media discussion about basketball. Like, there's no element. This isn't March Madness where you get hot and you had a couple of good nights in a row. They won three best of seven series to get here. So the idea that somehow this is a disappointment or it could have been or should have been someone else is just preposterous.
That they're unworthy. That seems silly. Yes.
Going back to what you were saying, I mean, like one of the things that Spoelstra normally does to teams, even the role players, is he makes it frantic for them, right? You don't want to take your chances and say, okay, this role player who's not used to the moment is going to get a wide open shot because that's the most comfortable thing that you want to just make him think. You want to make him have to make a quick decision. I don't know if they're afraid of that because it's so easy to just throw it up to AD whenever it looks like there's nobody in the paint. And, you know, they probably haven't dealt with somebody quite like that, although Giannis seems to be like that. It just speaks to more of what we were saying about them coming in and playing a very blah, vanilla concept. And, you know, the idea of changing it up is a possibility. Again, you know, with the idea of if everybody's healthy, there's potential.
We do have more stuff that I'm, you know, from these injuries, too, with Miami. It looks like with Bam, it's also like a neck strain issue, too, which mm-hmm. makes sense now as to why he's having issues just raising his arm because he's got, you know, Spo yesterday talked about it, right? He's like, it's a lot of things. It's the wrist. It's the shoulder. It's just kind of the arm. And now if it's the neck, there's that, too, hence why he would be doubtful. And, you know, our Malik Andrews also reported that Jimmy Butler has a wrap on his left ankle. So, like, yeah, they're a mash unit right now. So it's just, you know, unfortunately, the way this thing is going to work.
Yeah,
you know,
Jimmy Butler's injury might have been the headliner from the Miami Heat perspective about their chances. If it weren't for the other huge injuries to the now doubtful Bam Adebayo and Goran Dragic, we all know, I think we're all in unison here, he'd have no shot. Of maybe possibly even stealing a game without Bam Adebayo. So we'll see what happens there. But even with Bam Adebayo out there, Jimmy Butler, who has been proven right, I think we can all agree there. The Jimmy move from Philadelphia has worked out regardless of whether or not they even get swept in this finals. But If Bam Adebayo somehow toughs it out and plays, Jimmy Butler has to take it to a level that only certain Timberwolves players saw in practice. Zach, he played for Minnesota. Is he capable of doing this, especially with guys like LeBron and Anthony Davis out there as part of the defense he has to attack?
Before he tore cartilage in his knee that first season in Minnesota, the Wolves had the third most wins in the West, and they were the four seed because of just a couple of percentage points again with the Spurs in terms of, like, the Wolves with Andrew Wiggins and Jeff Teague and Karl Anthony Towns and Taj Gibson, Jamal Crawford and Gorgui Dieng and Tyus Jones as their rotation. The basically three or four seed. Like, Jimmy's absolutely capable of dragging a mediocre team into looking a lot better than they are and winning games they probably shouldn't. And a lot of that happened that season from him just deciding these guys aren't good enough. Like, I got to do this on my own. Like, right. That's essentially what he did. Like, early December, there was a flight after a loss. They lost like 92-89 at home to the Wizards. And he had a flight to New Orleans with the team, and he ripped the team. Basically, like, you guys are a bunch of bums. Like, this is not acceptable. This is not how you win basketball games. And then, you know, from there on, he just decided, screw this, I'll do it myself. He's capable of doing it. It's just he also wasn't playing LeBron and AD every single night.
George, I want to bring you in and then get everybody's final thoughts entering game two. The narrative is going to be ramped up a little bit about Kobe. The Lakers are wearing their Mamba jerseys tonight in game two. LeBron, he's trying to change the math a little bit in catching Jordan because no one's ever done it with three different teams as the centerpiece guy. So that's going to be a cool part of his legacy. But it's going to be overshadowed, even this title win, by the passing of Kobe Bryant. How is this Laker team being embraced by Los Angeles during a global pandemic? And what is LeBron's legacy going to be? Because I feel like this title is just going to be as much about LeBron as it is Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, look, I think that the way that LeBron and the team handled the passing of Kobe Bryant, and anyone that was here in L.A., you know, outside of our offices where I'm at now, I mean, he was being memorialized for a week, like, straight, until literally the city said, look, you can't do it anymore. You know what I mean? And whether it was here or at the Lakers facility in El Segundo, that was kind of the deal. And I just think the way they handled it really endeared LeBron to Lakers fans on top of his play, right? Like, last year, they kind of got robbed of what LeBron really is. And this is kind of the first time they're seeing the playoff version of LeBron, whatever he calls it, Zero Dark 23 or whatever he calls it. And I think that people were like, whoa, yeah, now I know now I see what we were getting, right? So the combination of the way he's handled that and the way that he's playing, it's going to be about Kobe. There's absolutely going to be part of it. And I think the Jordan discussion will be a part of it too, because as you said, he's kind of tried to change the math some and do it this particular way. Are they embraced? Yes, they are absolutely wholly embraced. And winning a championship is definitely an easy way to fully be embraced by even those who may doubt you amongst that particular community.
And in the absence of now what looks like competitive games, all that other storyline stuff is only going to be amplified in the national media. Izzy, I want to go around the horn here and lead with you, no pun intended. Final takeaways from game one, what you're looking for in game two, and the rest of what seems to be a short series.
I mean, what I'm looking for from game two is just that really desperate, you know, game back, you know, down 3-0 type of aggression from Miami early on. And seeing where that takes them, because that could just, you know, end up in a 25-25 tie and they're like, oh, that's all we got. But I'm intrigued on the Lakers side of it to see if LeBron lets AD wins final MVP. That would be interesting just for the whole, again, just going forward in terms of the legacy and everything. Hey, you get your fourth championship, but you're not the finals MVP, you know, versus that's a knock when it comes to the MJ conversation. Doesn't really matter really when it comes to the Kobe conversation because, because he wasn't finals MVP, right?
Yeah. Three times Shaq won. Yep.
I think for me, the thing I'm looking forward to is I want to see at what point the Heat throw out that zone, try some different stuff out there. I want to see if the young guys can settle down and play a little better. And then obviously, what's Bam look like? You know, what does a neck strain, a shoulder strain look like? And can he be a reasonable facsimile of himself?
You mentioned earlier, Tyler can't play worse. And I don't really agree. I think he could play worse. And I actually Here's the take. I think it would be great for the Heat if Tyler is a disaster this entire series. Like if Bam is out and Goron's out and this series is now a wrap, right? I don't want to see some scrappy, like Tyler Hero picked himself up off game one and he has it, you know, he wills them to a more competitive sweep than would have been before. Like, I actually think it would be better for him if he is as the Heat advertised in terms of mental makeup and future and all that stuff. I'm not saying he's going to be this, but you can clip it in a way that it does. It's like, it could be like Kobe airballs against Jazz-esque, right? It could be that in terms of like, look, you need embarrassment. Like, you had these great grand moments and then you had embarrassment on the biggest stage. And now go use that as motivation. I actually think that that might be, if the Heat are going to lose, that's the best case scenario.
Or they could trade him for Bradley Beal.
Or trade him for Bradley Beal, exactly.
Well, let me ask this question. Humor me for a second. What if this time Saturday we're talking about a series that's tied 1-1, right?
Well, that's what I'm looking for. What I'm hoping for, and I really
we
hope...
know you're looking for that.
Well, what I want, obviously, this is... Lakers Twitter living up to the billing, by the way. This one's hurting. And also part of it is just that the Heat have never trailed in a playoff series, so I've never actually had my mentions flooded. Exactly. And that sounds a little cocky and defensive, and it is. What I am hoping for, and game two is a great time to do it because I want to be excited for game three and work myself back in a hopeful Mike. I am looking to hang my hat on the culture win. The Jimmy Butler, the guts and guile, the Willis Reed moment, if you will, where other teams would certainly pack it in. And there's no shame in that, really, because you have your built-in excuse right now. You have your Golden State Warriors elimination, which is the best possible way a dynasty can end, even though this is far from a dynasty. But I'm just using that as a comparison. I want the one, puff my chest out, we could have ran. We could have just punted on this, but no, that's not what Heat culture is about. Come bathe with me on the road, sealing game two. We got a real series, game three at home. Bathe yourselves in Biscayne Bay's culture. George Sedano, I'll let you bat at the bottom of the ninth here because your team is up 1-0 as your Hollywood George. Am I going to get that?
I mean, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's best case scenario at this point, especially if Bam and Goron can't play. Like, maybe, you know, you can find a way to win one and salvage it that way. But it, look, man, AD and LeBron are just different kinds of beasts, and they're not Tatum and you know, LeBron specifically is not Tatum or Giannis. Like, it's a, even at 35, man, it's just a different animal when you're talking about him.
So. Okay. So maybe sock up then on Kendrick Nunn, a nice little showcase for a trade piece that maybe
yeah.
was.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more in line with Zach of like the embarrassment can help them more than anything else. I'm with that.
That's a bummer. Maybe I should just go watch Tenet. And said, this one hurts, but...
I don't think Tenet exists.
I'm with you, too. I don't buy anything.
What?
Did you guys see the Borat teaser in the middle of the game yesterday? Yeah. I got so excited.
Yeah, October 23rd, right? Amazon Prime. The full title is ridiculous. Hang on, let me pull up that full title in the meantime.
Mikhail Pence is the
Vice Premier Mikhail Pence. So the title, when the title leaked out, you kind of had the idea that it was going to be coming out before the election. George, what do you got here?
So I've got some Jimmy Butler quotes here. He was asked, what has happened throughout the year that gives you the confidence that this group can withstand this adversity? He responds, you talk about adversity? I mean, for us, we thrive in that. And I say it all the time. If you look at everybody, probably thought they were going to do that to us anyway, right? That we were going to lose. They probably think that they're going to do it to us three more times in a row, talking about the Lakers. I beg to differ. Nobody picked us to be here. Like I said, we embrace it. We love it. But we know that we can win. We do. But we know that we got to play perfect, man. We can't not rebound and not get back. So coming into game two, all the adversity, backs against the wall, yada, yada, yada. We're going to win.
Whoa! We're gonna win from Jimmy Butler. Wow,
Mike, is it devastating to know that Jimmy doesn't listen to the most brilliant basketball minds?
Well, I feel like
no one picked him to be there.
We
did pick them to be there.
Yeah, many of us here in this Zoom picked them to actually win, except a grinning George Sedano who has just put on a yellow Laker jersey. Guys, thank you so much.
Put makeup on, by the way.
Yeah,
you did have to put makeup on. far, because I one am point, 5 minutes away from being
fun,
on camera.
Yeah. Fun little treat, Easter egg for the audience. Go back in this podcast and find out when George closed his makeup powder case, because the microphone certainly picked that one up. And we all had to pretend like we didn't see what was happening. It was distracting. Look, Allen Iverson had one victory in the NBA Finals, and it lived forever, right? And we're in the GIF age. Give me a GIF. Give me a Heat culture win. Give me a Jimmy Butler performance. Give me something, because that's basically, we're in the moral victory portion of the stages of grief. We're in the just give me a GIF phase.
Bargain it.
Udonis Haslam.
Oh, that's right. He's going to get a showcase game here, you got to think, because you can't put him in at the end of game one, because that's insulting to Udonis Haslam. But he, as
give
we
him
mentioned,
the start.
He could be our Speedy Claxton.
You know what a Jimmy GIF is, right? A GIF.
Which is how it's supposed
to be pronounced. Yeah. I've actually finally caved. Right. I was GIF, but that's very clever. And Jimmy Butler's like one of the more GIFable superstars out there in the league. The best search on Giphy. All right, guys, thank you so much. I was hoping for maybe one more edition, but I don't know if we're going to be allowed that, given how the injury situation has shaked out. So thank you so much for your time. There might be something to this, Basketball's Most Brilliant Minds. Nice little template here. So thank you guys so much for joining us. This hour is obviously posting earlier. If you're listening to it right now, local hour will have the full cast of characters, Marlon's reaction, as well as we turn our attention to a team that probably even has a better chance, even though one team's in the finals. I'm depressed.